to put, not back to that town, that would be part of my story.
32 years.
I really am humbled being here because this program has saved my life. I wouldn't be sitting here, and I have, I've been blessed to be in these rooms. I just came back from a Region 7 assembly, and I was telling a couple of gals that were out there, I had to start with a quote that I heard Sunday morning, and I said, wow, that quote really, really hit me. And it was eventually all addicts give up their substance, but it's nice to be alive when it happens. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, yeah, that is so true, because I would not be alive today if I hadn't been able to find the miracle in these rooms. And I used to say to myself, you know, I have to be passionate about something in life. Everybody has a passion about something, whether it's, you know, horses or dogs or cats or whatever. Whatever it is, you know, they have a hobby or they have something. And my hobby was eating. But I'll tell you that I have become very passionate about this program. If there's anything that I truly believe in, besides I'm committed to my marriage and to my life as a healthier person, I am committed to this program. I don't want to make this all about the food, but I will start with that too. It's that before, if I didn't put down the food when I first came in, I would not have been able to connect with God. I would not have been able to hear God's message. I would not have been open to receive any of it. When I first came into the rooms, I heard something. I had a feeling that came over me that I could never explain. And until I got into the rooms and realized what it was, I knew that everybody else that was in the rooms had that same feeling or we wouldn't be here. It was more than a support group. It was something that was just like a miracle because, of course, you know, like I said, it's not, I don't want to go all the way back. I heard all these great expressions. I wish they were mine. I wish I could have thought of them. But it said, you know, don't get, you know, if you find yourself on the pity pot too much, then you need to flush. So I said, that's true. So I'm not going around with pity and the poor me's and everything. I realize as I get older, we all had a lot of us had rough childhoods. When I hear people say, oh, I had a perfect childhood, then I still ate. Okay, well, that shows me then that it wasn't just my house. I thought it was my house. I thought it was the mother I had. It was the fact that we were a single-parent family at the time when single-parent families weren't popular, and I perceived that everybody else had the best, the most, father knows best life, you know, that it all worked, you know, it all worked like Leave It to Beaver. Everybody came home and mom had the pearls and the whatever. I didn't have that. That never happened in our lives. So I just felt that I must have had the worst life because I was always controlled, always told what to do. So of course, another thing I heard this weekend was the perfect word. It's like, I didn't want to be restricted. I was restricted enough in my life for things that I could never do. I wasn't allowed to do, you can't this, you can't that. You will do what I say. And that was also the generation. How did that hit me? How did I respond? I used to eat. I never realized that it was a hole that I was filling. I was angry. I was so angry as a kid because having that kind of house and being the third one, it was my mother, my older sister, and myself. And my mother was a very unhappy woman. She was a widow and very harsh. And of course, she, you know, put that onto my sister, who then again, it's like, you know, when somebody kicks the dog, not that I ever kicked my dog, but you know, that old thing about you keep going downhill. So I never felt like I really could talk to anybody or anybody cared what I had to say. That's the kind of life we had. And it was a very somber, it was very unhappy. And not only that, my mother was focused on fat. That to her was about the worst thing that you could be, fat. It kind of reflected back on her, and that was her thing, that how could she have two fat daughters? Well, she had two fat daughters. She had my sister and she had me, and we were fat. But again, the message was you're not good enough, and when you become good enough, you'll be thin. Because she did say, I know you're smart, I know you can do it, I just don't understand why you have to eat all the time. Why do you have to eat so much food? You have a disease. Well, yeah, she hit it on the head, but that was in 1948. And it was like, yes, but I didn't know that. She really didn't know that, but it frustrated her so much and it made her crazy. Because from her own background, she had a lot of insecurities. So of course, she did not want people to judge her and us. And that's how it came out. So never being quite right, never fitting there, I was very, very angry. And I didn't really know that until I came into the rooms and they were talking about eating behaviors. And my eating behaviors, of course, at coming in at 335 pounds, my eating behaviors are pretty bad. I used to eat round the clock. I mean, by the time I came into the rooms, I was eating and eating and eating. But my eating behaviors were not, I want something soft. I had heard somebody in program say that because that was kind of like being gentle on yourself to chew soft. I was always crunching and, you know, always whatever it was, I would eat fast and I would eat hard and I wanted it heavy. And it was like eating like this, like this. And when I first came into the rooms, let me say this. As I was growing up and I heard all this and, of course, go through every humiliation that a kid can go through with overweight and high school and boyfriends and feeling fat and then being told you're fat on top of it. You know, don't wear a bathing suit because, you know, you don't want anybody to look at your legs. You know, don't ever put shorts on. And all the messages so that it was all the don'ts. Don't do this. Don't do that. And it was the embarrassment and the humiliation of how I looked. It was always how I looked. It wasn't about, gee, you're a nice person, or you're smart, or you could do this, or you're good at that. It was look good, and then you would be good. And if my perception again, everybody must be a cheerleader. Everybody. Or everybody thin should try out for cheerleading, because why wouldn't they? And I couldn't understand kids that didn't, because after all, they had it all. When you're thin, in my head, you had it all. And I had early on decided that at the time I could leave the house and do what I wanted, I would do what I wanted. Because after all, again, I was restricted. And we were always restricted with the food. There was never food in our house like people have food in their cabinets. And that was a big restriction. So I said, I'm going to have all the food I want and I'll do it. So I did it. I did it. I really did it. I gained 200 pounds in not that long a time, from being married at age 23 to walking into the rooms at age 38. I had gained that weight and lost some of it a lot. So I can't say to you, Jay, I gained it once. Like anybody else in these rooms, I think we've gained thousands of pounds, gained and lost. So I'm not going on to say about, okay, all the horror stories that are connected with overweight, but they are. They really are. So a long time ago when I led on Unity Day, Margaret, God rest her soul, said to me, why don't you blow up your ugly picture? It's like, yeah, this was the picture that the summer before I came in, I had one dress. And I had decided at that time, because I'm so controlling, that I would buy two dresses. There was going to be a summer dress, this was it, and there was going to be a winter dress, which was dark, well, blue, but long sleeves. And that's the way it would be. I would never lose weight. It would never happen because I had taken every pill, everything you could imagine, you know, short of surgery or anything like that, you know, short of locking me in a cell, and I would have lost the weight. But then the minute I got out, I would have eaten everything in sight. So, you know, there was nothing for me. I had gone to so many doctors. I had done all the pills. I had put myself on a toxemia diet when I was pregnant because I was afraid I was losing the pregnancy. And when I didn't lose it and I had these two beautiful twins, these little girls that are here in this picture, I told my husband to bring me everything in the hospital coffee shop I hadn't eaten in 9 months. And he was like, what? And I said, bring it. So anybody that was a normal person, a normal eater, when they realized they had lost a lot of weight in this pregnancy, and the doctor was so happy and said to me, well, now that you weigh like 240, keep going down from there, lose another 100. You know, I gained another 100. So that was the story. That was the basic story. This disease is really hard. It's really sad because from this person in the pictures, when my sister-in-law got married in 1973, and of course, why does everybody smile in these pictures? It's so awful. It's like I'm smiling and I'm like this giant person in the back. I'm bigger than anybody in the picture. And it's horrible. And of course, my daughter, who's 45 now, is crying, sitting here. That was the nice picture that went through the family in the albums because I had just yelled at her because I was so bitchy and nasty. I wanted her to stand in front of me to cover me in this picture. That's where my mentality was. And she wanted to sit with her grandmother who was here. Or her grandmother said, let her stand with me for this profession. But, oh, no. So I, of course, you know, yelled at her, and she dissolved into tears, and my usual was, stop that, you know, get him. So you could see what that's about. When I first came into the rooms, I was promised what they said, a miracle. I didn't believe it. I came and I sat for 6 months. I got that feeling, as I said, that something might work, because they said it would. They promised that if, rarely have we seen a person follow our path, and I thought to myself, okay, they are promising me something I've never heard before. That was my first miracle. I've had a lot of miracles in this room. That was being picked up, and I like to say, from the gates of hell, because I came in there with my size 54 black raincoat, sitting and crying in the back. I didn't want anybody to look at me. God knows, you know, whatever. But of course, I had that pity pot going. And I remember, God rest her soul, this woman who was old at the time, I guess she was 70, hello. And she said to me, what are you crying about? And of course, she was this big. And I said, all this. And she said, well, get off your ass and do something about it. And I was shocked. It was like, wow. You know, of course, my feelings were hurt, and it was like, well, why would she say that? But I realized that if you want it, it comes when you work for it. And that's what I have learned in these rooms. It's not the food plan that I pick. Everybody's food plan is different. Yes, do I need a food plan? I do. I can't moderate meal it. I need to know that I have certain things. I also have to live in the real world. So it's, for me, it is about the food and it's not about the food. I don't say that's first. My sponsor said to me at the time, do the steps, work the program, and the weight will come off. That will happen. Of course, I didn't believe it, but I wanted to believe it. And she said, forget the weight. You weigh yourself once a month. And you know what? It did. I don't even remember the numbers, except that I can remember when I came in, I was about 335 pounds. I had just gone to the doctor, and that was like, I was never going back again, because you remember that I had two dresses and I was planning to die. I said to myself, I'll just die. I'll eat and die, and I'm never going back to see him again because it's none of his business. And, you know, I had all of this, but I really didn't want to die. I really did. And God knew that he didn't want me to die because he wanted me to be here. And I really believe that with all of my heart, because I'm passionate about these rooms. This program is a miracle. So I came in, I got the sponsor, we worked together, she slipped. I thought that she was my lifeline. See, that's another thing. The tools are fabulous, and I have to work the tools, but people change in your life. I couldn't believe she slipped. And somebody else who was out at Region 7 this weekend, we were being sponsored by the same person, and we cried. We sobbed on each other's shoulders. What are we going to do? And we decided we would get another sponsor that night, and I got somebody. Continued on in the rooms. I got so much from my first sponsor. She was coming from numbers like I was. She gave me that boost to let me know this is possible. When I looked at my body and I just stared at it and I said, where's all this going to go? Where does this go? Where does all this weight, what happens? What happens is God takes it, okay? Of course, the other flip side of this is I turned it into a diet, a food plan. That's why you're going to see where I say going towards anorexia. I couldn't stop, because then I, in my mind, decided that I knew it, that's how it worked, and that I would just keep losing weight until my body came up the way I wanted it to come. Well, I have to laugh, because you ever see the balloons at a birthday party when the kids take them down and they shrivel and they're all like shrivelly yucky? Well, they're not going to look like the balloons in the package. So, of course, my body's not going to look like, you know, I should have looked when I was 16 had I been normal. And I kept thinking, it has to. The doctor said the skin goes back. And it wasn't going back. You know what I mean? All right, that's the first clue. So that wasn't the reason, though. There were a lot of other things that came in to our life at the time with our kids. So I was working on this for about 10 years. Really hard, and I got to the point in the food plan. That's why I say I don't want to dwell on the food, because I was crazy. I was so crazy that if I had one extra this, so we couldn't go out to eat, we couldn't do this, I was restricting this, restricting that, and guess what? All of a sudden, it was like, I'm not doing this anymore. The mind just snapped. I wasn't going to lie about it to anybody. I wasn't going to, because, I mean, you make the commitment. You're not going to lie to the sponsor. You're going to stay with it. But then all of a sudden, I didn't want the sponsor. I didn't want the program. I didn't want anybody bothering me. Because, after all, I knew what to do, so my weight wasn't going on. Yeah, it did. It didn't come on the whole way, but it was going up. It had gotten up there and finally up to around 80 pounds higher than I was when I had gotten to my goal. And you know what? How the mind just turns around and says, you look the same, until I caught myself in a three-way mirror. And I said, you don't look the same. You don't look the same. And it made me cry because I thought I had such good feelings and I trusted my life to God. I turned things over. I prayed all the time and I had that connection. And I remember being in therapy at the time, and the guy that was leading one of the groups, they put me in a codependence group. Big surprise. That's the other thing that goes together, the codependence and the people-pleasing and doing what everybody else wants me to do, and then that'll be the good person that you are, and then you'll be accepted, and they will like you. So this guy was sitting there, and he was a recovered drug addict, and he was leading this codependent group, and he said, man, I had to work my program like crazy today because I had so many problems come up. And something hit me all of a sudden, and I thought, work your program like crazy. I haven't worked a program like crazy in years. I was out there eating for 5 years. I'm glad that I didn't go all the way back up to where I was, but I wasn't working the program. I was on the fringes. I might have gone to one meeting a week. I wasn't asking God for anything because I didn't like the way God had orchestrated my life at the time. We had a lot of problems. People have problems in their lives. They get sick. They have diseases. Yeah, I had a lot of problems within the house, but a lot of that stuff, too, was what people go through. But I didn't want to go through that. I didn't want my daughter to be suicidal. I didn't want the other one to not want to live home anymore. I didn't want my son and other daughter who were away at college to decide they didn't want to come home because our home was a very unhappy place. Because everything was this, again, pressure, and control. It was the control. I had so much control because I was going to control. Until the psychiatrist said, I want you to go back to OA. I didn't want that. That was 16 years ago. That was the last thing I wanted. I argued with her. She was going to give me a prescription, and that was her prescription. I thought I was getting more pills. It's always going to be the easier, softer way. She's going to give me something, then that's going to do it for me this time. And how was I going to get this weight off? What was I going to do? I was going to start again at ground zero. And you know, when I think about coming back in, I don't have the same focus that I had before. I had to let go of a lot of that stuff. I had to let go of trying to please people, trying to please a sponsor, not being honest with them. Well, you know, because then it's a lot of pressure again on, am I doing it the right way for somebody else? I really don't care if I'm doing it the right way for somebody else. I moved 7 years ago. We worked the program that I was in, the OA program in a certain way in the meetings in Central Jersey, a little differently than they worked it in Jersey Shore. So then I started wondering, well, am I abstinent? Am I not abstinent? Am I this? What's that about? I'm working along with a sponsor. I'm working with God. And I'm doing the things in my life every day to the best of my ability. And I'm taking the steps. And I used to say to myself, what does God have to do with my program? What does that have to do with it? God has everything to do with my program because without God, I have nothing. I can go out there. I was out there eating for all those years. And I remember when I was eating and I said I didn't want the program. And I said, good, nobody's going to call me now and bother me. I'll do whatever I want. When I go to a party, they'll all say, oh, you're back. You're not in that crazy place again. And you know what? I was in another crazy place because I didn't want to be where I was. I wanted to be back working my program like crazy. Because if there's anything that I get enthusiastic about, it's these rooms. I always wondered why the fit was so good when I came in. Because the support is there, the hole was being filled, and that's where I was meant to be. That's where God wanted me to be. And I think about that, and I think about the blessings of being alive, of having another chance of starting again. I'm thinking about the fact in the picture that we went whitewater rafting. Now that was you know, a big deal for me. That was 2 years ago. And of course, I'm kind of forced into the raft because I promised my kids, I always do this, I said, I'll do it. Yeah, I'll do it. I love those things. I'll go whitewater rafting, don't worry. So they said, you mean it? And I said, oh, I mean it. Sure, I mean it. I'll go. But I really didn't mean it. I kept thinking, I'll go, but I'm not pulling that raft, or I'm not, whatever I have to do. I'm not sitting on the outside. No. So we get down, and we get to the water. Now, I've got 10 grandchildren, all right? And I'm thinking one of those kids has got to be one of the a paddler, because Grandma's not paddling. So we start down, and I guess maybe two of them didn't come. And we were six adults, and then my one granddaughter was 10. And she's a big girl, and I said to her, Em, you'll paddle for Grandma. She says, oh, I don't want to do that. That scares me. And I, crap, you know, how can you force a 10-year-old kid? What a rotten grandmother. And I said, oh, come on. I mean, that's easy. It's not that bad. You just sit on the outside. You know, I'll sit next to you. She says, Grandma, I really don't want to. So then the woman that's going to help us along says to me, oh, no. She said, you have to sit on the outside. But you dig your feet under there and take the pole. You'll be fine. I can't even tell you that I was like dying. And I just, who do I really, I pick up the end of my raft. I'm like, crap. Walk down. It's freezing. I'm up to here in the water. I get in. And, of course, I pray. And I said, God, please, let me just do this. And, of course, it worked. And then we had the big water fight and everything else. And I honestly had fun. I had more fun with my kids because my oldest daughter is so fresh. She always is so fresh. And she said to me, I could tell you're not paddling. You're behind me. And she said that she didn't say rest, Mom. So you just work. Joan always wants the easier, softer way. I like to rest. So I'm just, you know, if I could share with you just to stay with it and keep coming back. That is the biggest part of this program. Keep coming back. Just do it. People will say, how did you get it? It came to me as a gift. That's how I get it. I do the same things every single day that I do. I eat the same food. It's not, really and truly, it's just my way of life. And I love the way of life, because without the way of life, I'm really scared. I'm really scared. I wasn't a huge churchgoer at all, because that was another thing that I felt pressed with. And I felt like, how do all these people have this religion that I was born into and I don't have? How do they really believe all this? I don't think I believe this. So I did the motions. And I went to talk to a priest about it. And he said that several years ago, maybe you have to change your notion of God. How do you change your notion of God when you're raised in a particular religion? Because then there's that guilt. You know, there's that old guilt and that they, well, am I doing it right? Or should I? And that's another thing that all of a sudden I prayed about that so much. And I said, God, please let me be real. Let me not pretend to believe in something that I don't understand or I can't believe in. And you know what? This peace came over me that I'll do it. You know, I don't have to be religious. I feel like I'm very spiritual. Yes, do I go back now to services in different places? I sure do, but I'm not guilty anymore. I enjoy my life so much in recovery. My daughter, two of my daughters go to a Unitarian church, and it was my pleasure to go there and to hear this and to hear what they were saying about that. And I said to them, whenever I'm up here, I'll come with you. I don't feel anymore like I have to please anybody else or I have to please God. I'm pleasing God, I believe. I believe because I'm doing His will. I try to do service. I try to stay in the rooms. I have a commitment. When I make a commitment, I keep the commitment. I try to be as honest as I can be. These are all principles that I've learned in these rooms. Have the promises come true for me? Pretty much. Pretty much. I'm not worried about the future as much anymore. And I will end with one thing. I have somebody, a dear friend in my life, I love so much, and we've been working together for 13 years. She has a devastating diagnosis right now. And we were talking about that the other day, and she said she always thought if she got a devastating diagnosis, what would she go out and eat everything she hasn't eaten for 13 years? And she said no, she wouldn't, because she needs to keep her hand in God's hand. So she can wake up sane every morning and continue to do what she's got to do. And I feel that way too. because I think the finest place to be is to be in recovery when I am down and out, because otherwise I have nothing. So I hope that helped somebody, and I hope you realize that I'm just speaking for me, but I hope I'm speaking to you too, because this is the biggest blessing, aside from my children, I have to say, my children. Abstinence has to be number one in my life, because otherwise I wouldn't be there for anybody. So thank you.
Thank you.